Future Alex here. Before we cut this episode together, we forgot to mention the two-man Secret Santa coming up on our Discord. Didn't want to leave that out because it's getting close to the deadline of when you can actually enter and be a part of that thing. It's not too late to actually be part of the two-man giveaway where we're just going to give you something. But if you want to actually be a part of giving the gift of comics for Christmas or the holiday season, whatever you celebrate, it's going to be a really cool event. We already have a handful of people interested in doing it. Didn't want to leave that out. So click the links in the description or the show notes or wherever you're watching this. It'll be there so you can see how to get involved this holiday season and give the gift of comic books. Super low barrier to entry. We're not asking that you buy hundreds of dollars worth of comics. Just a cool way to give the gift of this really cool medium and spread a little holiday cheer. Back to the episode. Hey guys, I'm Alex.
And I'm Drew.
And today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're taking a look at Time Before Time by Declan Shalvey and team. Let's go.
My timing was a little off.
It's all right. We're running this in two-man mode.
Yeah.
Oh, so, excuse me. I'm recovering from a truly a small but still there cold. So, I sound a little under the weather. I feel fine. I'm not contagious or anything, so should be good. We are doing this again.
Yeah. I'm a goober, and last time, about a week ago, we got together to record an episode on this book, and we recorded like 45 minutes of it. And then my laptop shut down because I didn't bring my power brick because I was like, we're just recording one episode. There's plenty of time.
Yeah, it was one of those freak things where it just happened. We thought we were in the clear. Yeah. It hasn't happened a ton of times over the history of us recording, but every once in a while, some little thing. The worst part is just that Drew drove all the way here. And
So we lost everything, like all the fancy audio through the microphone and the audio that was running through our video splitter, our video switcher, was way too loud and just unusable. So
yeah, it was like distorted, nasty. There was no...
But I took that as an opportunity because this is a great book. And the last time I kind of had read a little bit of it, I mean, I had read it, but it had been a while. So the last couple of days I've reread it and taken notes on it. So hopefully I will be presenting a much more concise thing. And also, since we recorded that, the issue 6 came out, a little standalone thing.
Love that cover, by the way.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it. Alex hasn't had a chance to read that yet. I'm going to leave it with him, but I did. And had a little conversation with Declan Shalvey, Chris O'Halloran, and Heather Antos on Twitter because they posted something. Alex responded, and then we responded with our two-man account saying, hey, I wish we could get one of those time travel pods to fix our mistake because we just recorded it and lost all the audio and had a fun little exchange with him. And because of that, I was like, you know, I left like after that conversation to go pick up this book.
Yeah. It's cool because Twitter kind of creates this pretty easy path to talk with some creators. If you're just not a weirdo, like don't be weird. Don't be heckling famous people or just being a jerk. But if you're just like a legitimate human being and fan of comics and you reach out, like Dan Slott has answered some of my questions. Mitch Gerards and Tom King, two of my favorites, have reached out to me on Twitter.
Right whenever we started this and we did the worst X-Men ever, Max Bemis responded. He's the guy who did it.
Yeah.
He responded like with our thing, like, what's the worst superpower ever? So like sometimes it's just like a kind liking or retweeting. Sometimes it's like actually having conversations and it's really neat. That's the cool thing about comics, Twitter.
It's an entire other reason to jump up and interact with us on Twitter because you might even be getting to interact with some of the big names in the game because comic book Twitter is pretty happening place.
Speaking of comic books on Twitter, you can find us on there at Two Man Comic Book with the number 2. Just tossing that out there while we're here.
Yeah. What about all of our other things?
Instagram, at Two Man Comic Book Club. While we're here, if you're a longtime listening fan, you know that I've been bemoaning the fact that our links don't work Well, I want you to scroll down in your podcasting app right now and click on any of the links because they should all work now. The Discord link works. The Patreon link works. The Instagram, Twitter, Facebook one. And the reason I mentioned is because whenever I went through to do that, I've been saying we're at Two Man Comic Book Club on Facebook, which if you search, you can find it. But if you try to go to facebook.com/Two Man Comic Book Club, you will not find us. It's this ridiculously long thing.
It's not super intuitive to find us there.
Search for us on Facebook. But seriously, the Discord, we got some cool stuff going on. Two Man Secret Santa through there. So join Discord if you want to be a part of that. By the time this comes out, we might be getting close to the time that we have to kind of shut that down so that people can actually shop and send stuff out. But there's something that can take a little bit longer. If you go to our YouTube and you find a video, like this video, if you're watching us on YouTube, find anything and comment with the hashtag #TwoManChristmas2021 and you'll be entered in a drawing that we will send out and we'll announce probably the winner for that on our Two Man Christmas special, which will be coming up, our second annual Two Man Christmas special.
I am genuinely excited for that. We have several people involved already.
I already did some shopping.
Thing. I haven't done my shopping yet, but I have some ideas of what I'm going to get. While I'm thinking about it, what is that other podcast website?
Podchaser.
I'm trying to look at that.
While he's looking that up, seriously, if you could join our Discord, that'd be awesome. We like talking about comics and other random things like guitar pedals. And there was something else. Oh, hot sauce. So please do that. If you've been listening and you enjoy it, we started a Patreon so that you can try to support us and make it easier for us to make this content. Patreon.com/Two Man Comic Book Club, or just click on the link that I'm 90% sure will work in the description. So you got it yet?
Did we get the one about Robert Stewart? We already mentioned that one, right? Or was that in last episode?
I can't remember what the name was.
Robert Stewart on August 28th said standout show.
Oh yeah, we did. But we did do that. Double feature there.
Yeah, that's how much we love Robert.
Yeah.
If you leave us a review, we'll give you a shout out. Specifically, it's a 5-star review. It's one of the best ways you can go out of your way to spread our content and just share the love of comic books with everybody, either on Podchaser or more popularly, I think, probably Apple Podcasts. Mm-hmm. I still haven't figured out how to go and see international reviews because they're not in the same space as the American reviews, but apparently they're out there and we have definitely an international following.
Yeah, I'm always shocked. Like the Ukraine. Is it Ukraine or the Ukraine? Anyway, there's some listeners there. Vietnam. So.
We were trending in the top 200 podcasts at one point in the Netherlands, I believe, early on.
But it was Are you listening from the Netherlands? Join our Discord and let us know.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Did you plug your own social media?
No, you can find me at Drew Morris Comp on Twitter, Drew Morris Composer elsewhere. You can find my website, drewmorrismusic.com, because I'm a composer.
You can find me at Alex Wayne Miller on all social media. Wayne is WAYNE, just like Bruce Wayne, because I am the Bat.
Nice. Wow. So if you made it through that, you must really like us. So maybe you'd like to hear what we've been reading. Hey, what you been reading, Alex?
I have been reading quite a bit, but one of the things that I've been making a concerted effort, like read some more indie books. So I heard all this buzz about this TV show comic book adaptation for a show called Why the Last Man.
Oh.
And I've read like 12 or 13 issues of that, something like that.
Is that Brian?
Brian and the K. Vaughn.
Yeah, Brian K. Vaughn.
Paper Girls and Saga.
I've got something to say about that.
Yeah. It's really good. I'll try to give you like a little taste of it. It's basically... we're in a relatively modern day America, and we have our character Yorick, Y-O-R-I-C-K, and he's just kind of like some dude. You know, he's just a dude. He doesn't really know what he's doing with his life, and we're kind of like seeing little bits of the world, different people, different stuff, and then this something happens, and suddenly all things on the planet with a Y chromosome die immediately, which means all men die, all male animals die, all DNA or sperm cells or anything, it is dead. And we don't know what happened, but for some reason, it didn't kill Yorick or this monkey that he picked up to help train to assist old people. Hmm. The only two last living male things on the planet. And then it kind of jumps a little bit in the future, and we kind of find ourselves in this world of like a very female driven, I guess a little bit of everything. They kind of talk about some gender stuff throughout so far in very interesting ways. It's interesting for sure. I can absolutely see why they picked it up to do it for a TV show. It feels like I'm watching a TV show when I'm reading it, but super cool. A lot of it is on Comixology, but I don't think all of it, because there's like 10 volumes or something like that, which all have, I mean, that means it's like 50 issues or so.
I almost started reading that the other day, just because I've heard mention of him. I was listening to My Ultimate Year, and I think they were talking about Brian K. Vaughan, which reminded me about Saga, and they talked about Why the Last Man, and I almost started reading it, but I haven't because there's so many other things I'm working through.
Yeah, it's good. There are a few like surprisingly like cringe moments of some language that was used.
How old is this?
It's like 2013.
Oh, okay.
So pretty modern. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's at least two instances I can think of where they toss around the R word kind of casually. And it's not in a sense of like, I don't know. Sometimes there's a way to like make a villain, you know, use language like that, and it kind of makes you hate him even more, but it's not quite like that. You know, it's like the main character says it in passing just to describe something that he doesn't like, you know. Yeah, just a very old fashioned,
I saw that,
inappropriate.
I read that same thing in a recent book. I can't remember if it was Saga or something else I was reading, but it was just like, maybe that's just a blind spot for Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah. I was surprised. There's also, I don't know. I won't speak to if it can ever truly be appropriate to use language like that. Maybe in a certain context. Again, I'm not the person to make those decisions at all. I just assume steer clear. But also, like, you know, one of the main characters in the series is this kind of this black lady who's like an agent. She's super awesome, and they're like train hopping at one point, and these like train gangster goons get on there, and one of them calls her the N-word, and it's like, it's just jarring language to read in a comic book for sure. So I think there's probably a wide spectrum of who is okay with that and what the context is, but it is absolutely like it's a tricky thing to handle, especially in the context of, is Brian K. Vaughan white?
I actually couldn't tell you.
I don't know either. I've just seen his work. I don't actually like watch any videos or interviews. But anyway, neither here nor there. I'll just say that all. There's a warning. There's a more adult book for sure. Mm-hmm. All that being said, the story is really good. And I get, again, why it's being adapted for a TV show. But other than that, reread some Hawkeye. I actually read more than what was required for today's episode because we are covering, oh no, that's for next week.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week we're covering
just
that.
But if while you're saying it, like if you're listening to this and you haven't read Hawkeye, we're coming back to it next week to cover issues. Well, 9, 10, and 11, comma 7, comma 13.
Yeah.
I read
all the stuff in between that, and I think a couple passed.
Yeah, because I listened to them on the way here. We covered up to 4.
Right.
Or up to 5. So just read 6 through 13, and then you'll be caught up by the time the next issue comes out next week.
Yeah, and they're pretty quick reads. They're good. They're real good. It's incredible. Speaking of Matt Fraction, Hawkeye, this technically falls under what I've been reading, yo, because I read this online. Do you know he's married to Kelly Sue DeConnick?
Only because you told me.
That blew my mind. What a power couple in the comic books industry. Yeah. Like, I had no idea. I only learned that because I follow Kelly Sue DeConnick on Twitter, and she said, I'm at this, it's happening again. The internet is discovering that my husband is attractive. And I was like, well, who's her husband? Now I'm curious. So I Google Kelly Sue DeConnick husband, and then Matt Fraction pops up. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Also intimidating. What if you were like writing comics around each other and you both know you're really good, but that means the other person can like with some sort of authority say if your work is good or not, you know? Anyway, interesting stuff to find out. I haven't read much else other than that. I've stuck to... Oh, read more Watchmen. Haven't finished. Probably almost three quarters of the way through. Yes. What about you? What you been reading?
A lot. So I think I've forgotten some. Like I said, we started doing this last week, and my computer did not have the battery to make it through. So I'm sorry for every time I say, did we say this last time? Because we're referring to a time you haven't heard. And I've already forgotten some of the books that I said I read. So I'm just going to pull them out of the air and guess. I'm still working through Doom Patrol from the 80s. Haven't made it to the Grant Morrison stuff yet. I reread The Wicked and the Divine up through volume 2. Good stuff.
Which is that Hickman? No.
No, no, no. It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember. It's somebody we know. Maybe Gillen?
That might be. I think that's
Kieran Gillen. After I did that, I read a bunch of indie stuff. Got through my stack of shame, almost. And then I had a whole bunch more books come in because I decided to finally reread Saga. Because I'd read the first volume and I wanted to keep going. And I finished the first three because that's what you can get on Comixology Unlimited. A very adult book, by the way.
Yeah, it's killing.
It's good. It's like a fantasy / technology. It's like fantasy and sci-fi, space travel, all kinds of awesomeness. D&D in space, kind of. But I read the first three volumes on Comixology and had to read more because there are 9 volumes out currently, and they've been on hiatus for a while. But in January, fresh books are coming out. So
that's
I was like,
"That's right, I forgot I was like, about
that." I want to be caught up. So I found a collection of all 9 volumes in hard and trade paperback form on eBay for $60, and I ordered them.
Nice.
And I've been chipping through those. Now I'm through 6 volumes. 5 volumes, one of those. Anyway, it's a good story. I'm really curious. I'm anxious to get caught up so that I can read it as they come out starting in January.
Yeah, that's something that I also need to read. I know it's going to be good. I just haven't read it. Yeah, one of those things.
And I've also read some more Thor. I jumped back to Jane Foster Thor stuff.
Cool.
And enjoying that. And I've decided I want to collect the floppies for the entire run of Death of Superman.
That's right.
And I've been buying those and reading it on DC Universe. And I've made it through the Death of Superman. I'm in the middle of the funeral for a friend mini arc that happens after that. And I was like crying as
How
I was reading
it
last night. If you get on DC Universe and you read the Death of Superman run there, the first 4 books are unnecessary. Uh-huh. Like they include them because literally the last page has this panel. It's like Doomsday is coming and it shows his fist bashing his containment vessel. It doesn't mention him at all.
Right.
So I would start with the 5th one on the series, which I think is, I can tell you actually. Start with Superman Man of Steel number 18. You don't need to read the 4 before that. But I was going to say the first 4, which is like Superman, Man of Steel 17, Superman 73, Superman and Adventures of Superman 496, and Action Comics 683, feel old.
Yeah.
A lot of, let me tell you what I'm doing. Let me show you what I'm doing. And somehow once Doomsday shows up in Superman, Man of Steel number 18, the action pushes you forward far enough that it feels like, yeah, sometimes it's dated,
right,
the things that they do, but... From that all the way to the one that I'm at now, like I'm so engaged in the story. Even though I've read the novelization of this, I've watched TV shows about it and animated movies. And I think I read 2 novelizations of it and assemblage of comic books because I had the black poly bag Death of Superman thing whenever I was young. And I opened it and read it. I meant to share it with you. Like I want to bring one for you to see because I noticed when I got to that, every page is a splash page.
Cool.
And it was just like, it went by really fast, but I didn't mind it because it was like art, good art. But anyway, I feel like it holds up enough that like, it's rare for me to cry when I'm reading a comic book or reading a book even. But I was feeling tears, not when Superman died,
right,
but in the fallout afterwards of Jonathan and Martha Kent reacting to it, like holding each other, Lois Lane just walking around inconsolable.
Yeah.
I'm just like, how are they going? I mean, and I know he's going to come back, but
sure.
It was good.
It is one of those things that does make him feel, you know, that's, I've heard now just even from like the comic book writers, they're like, all right, I'm writing Superman or I'm writing the Incredible Hulk. other than having him fight somebody on par with his strength, how do I make them interesting? Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a way to do it. Like, yeah, not only just the death of him, but how does this affect everyone around him? That's interesting to me.
But yeah, so I've been reading some varied things, and I'm enjoying it a lot. Like, I get excited to read comics a little bit every day. So, yeah. And obviously I read Time Before Time and some Hawkeye in preparation for this. But yeah.
You mentioned reading Thor. Speaking of Thor, mm-hmm, with his superpower, Rodney Martinez, valid comic fan, just through us, really, had a question that just happened. He didn't even intend for this to end up on the podcast, but I'm putting it on here because he always texts us right when we're about to record or during recording. It's his superpower. But he sent me this meme. I'll actually put this up on the screen right now. Who wins this fight and why? And it shows Thor and Batman, the Chris Hemsworth and Ben Affleck flavors. And then there's kind of a funny comment at the bottom that says, you're literally putting the God of Thunder against a guy with a sore throat in a Halloween costume. Mm-hmm. So who wins Thor versus Batman?
Okay.
We promise not to take up the whole episode with this question.
I'm going to answer two different ways.
Yeah.
And by the way, I didn't see this until he just showed it to me. If Batman gets transported into the Marvel Universe, knowing nothing about it, Thor wins.
Yeah.
If this is a different universe where he has lived with Thor for a long time, as we saw in Tower of Babel, I have a feeling he's going to research to find a weakness.
Right.
And so if they've existed in the same universe, Batman, I don't know that, I think he would research a way to find his weakness. And I'm not going to necessarily say Batman would win that one, but I think he would hold his own more.
Yeah, he definitely loses unless he's prepared. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, Batman is the world's greatest detective. Mm-hmm. He will, if there is a way, he will find it. The thing is just finding, is there a way? Mm-hmm. You know, I guess technically Thor has died in the comics, so there's a way. But it was, you know, say Batman finds out, like, okay, I got to get him to Asgard, which means I got to get to Asgard. And I got to, what's Surtur during Ragnarok? Maybe he's like, I got to get Thor to Asgard during Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Killing a god sounds pretty hard.
I mean, he doesn't have to kill them. He just has to defeat them. Sure. Like Nick Fury, like the thing that I haven't read.
It just says fight, that's true.
I mean, so like if he just figured out how to make Thor feel unworthy, then he's just a guy and he's won.
Yeah.
So
I agree. Oh, that's creative.
I have a feeling that would be
he goes the route of making Thor unworthy.
Yeah.
That is hot. I would read that so hard. Yeah. Thanks for the question, Rodney. I love stuff like that. You can all reach out to us. My phone number is 1-800-YOUR-MAMA. But it'd be better if you reached out to us on Twitter and answered those questions.
And we actually have a little channel in Discord for like trivia.
Yeah.
So like if you have questions, like join the Discord, ask us, hey, I've got some things I'd like for you to talk. Maybe we can create a thread for that too, where you can be like, here's some questions I'd like to hear you discuss on the show. So
yeah. Cool. So I think before we jump into Time Before Time, we are going to take a quick break and we will be right back. And we are back after that quick break, and we are going to jump into Time Before Time, issues 1-5. Drew is going to take the lead on this and give you a quick overview, and including the creators of this team, Drew.
Yeah, to start off with, we're covering this book right here, Time Before Time. I have the trade paperback collection of the first five.
That's also the cover of number one, I believe.
Yeah. Alex, let me borrow the first two, and I read them, and then, sorry to say, kind of forgot about it until we were at the comic shop on one random trip, and he was like, oh, I think that just came out, so I had to buy it because I really liked it. Anyway, so the creative team, we got writers Declan Shalvey and Rory McConville, artist Joe Palmer, colorist Chris O'Halloran, letterer Hassan Otsmani El Hau, editor Heather Antos, designer Sasha E. Head, and cover of this by Declan Shalvey.
Yeah, I will say real quick before we jump in, there's also, we mentioned Haas Atsmani Alhao. Sorry if I'm butchering your name. He did the letters for this book, but he also is the editor of this really awesome publication called Panel by Panel, and it's a comic book magazine. I actually have it pulled up on the iPad. This is like they like kind of sell their stuff through Gumroad, but it's this really, really cool, in-depth, like super in-depth. This is the comic book industry magazine. Mm-hmm. So you get these editors and these essays and just this inside look and cool interviews. And you can like go back and buy like years of their panel stuff. And it's all, I'm a subscriber. It's like super cheap. It's like $2 a month. What did it say? $3? $3.50 a month. I think I'm grandfathered in at a cheaper price. It's super cool. Love it. Really glad it exists. It's just cool to get like an inside look. Like they'll, if you're like a true comic book nerd and you want to find something, you know, they do stuff on like lettering for horror books or something like that. Like just the nitty gritty, super detailed stuff. If you're that type of person, it's really cool. And then the guy that does the letters for Time Before Time helps put together this awesome publication. Just wanted to throw that out there. Anyway, Time Before Time, numero uno. Drew.
Cool. So I'm not going to necessarily show you every panel because we're dealing with a trade paperback here and we don't have a digital copy, but I do want to show you just this first page that looks really cool. Just look at that coloring that, who did I say did the color?
Yeah, that looks so good.
Chris O'Halloran, he really captures the mood. So like we start in 1987. And like I said, I'm not going to show you everything. Let me just flip through and show you a couple random pages so you can kind of see what this art looks like. And you can see we're going to be in 2141 a little bit because, as you can tell, this is about time travel.
Yeah, it's not like a super expansive palette where they're using just tons and tons of colors, but they utilize their palette super well. It's very, very nice to look at.
So anyway, there's this if you want it. In issue one, we open up in 1987, and we get introduced to a guy named Tatsuo, who will become our main character. And we kind of extrapolate over the first couple pages that he works for this group called The Syndicate, which already sounds pretty sinister. And he's talking to this family, and we learn that he is dropping them in 1987. And we realize they've come from the future, because the kid asks, what's the Wi-Fi password? And Tatsuo's like, dude, you're not going to have Wi-Fi for another 10 years. And the kid's like flipping out. And then he zips out of there. And all of a sudden, we see him popping into, like it says, 2141 right across the top. Or 2140, sorry. And it's like, it shows us the town. It's dingy. It's run down. It's just, the future doesn't look super opulent. You know, it's taken a hit. And we kind of put together, all right, he works with the syndicate. We learn a little bit more about it. They're kind of smugglers through time. And at one point, somebody makes a comment, hey, we got to pick up an order of Oxypolanus from 2278. And another group's going to 1999. So, you know, we just kind of see how it's going. They make their money by taking things to other times where they don't have them. And the reason that Tatsuo's there and a lot of people are there for the syndicate is because he owed money and they took on the debt. So he has to kind of work for them until he's paid down his debt. And in addition to that, like, it's not just like, oh yeah, it's easy. I'm going to go vacation in the future. There's a certain amount of radiation that comes through these pods.
Yeah.
So like you see a lot of projectile vomiting in this book.
Yeah. Apparently time travel is not too easy on the body.
Yeah. So, and then we learn that he has a roommate named Oscar, and they both work for the syndicate. And they're just talking like, yeah, man, I get tired of it. What if we stole a pod? And there's a really cool page where you see them like having the same conversation, like season after season after season. And then finally, Oscar, like a year later, it says across the top 2141. So it's literally been a year. And Oscar's like, so if we stole a pod, how would we do it?
Yeah.
And we're like, all right, it's on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tatsuo and Oscar, they decide they're going to do it. And they bust into this well, they don't bust in. They work there, but they go to the warehouse. I think they call it Terminal 5. And they just try to walk in like they own the place, you know, and somebody stops them and like, what are you doing here? Oh, it doesn't matter. We had somebody, you know, they're out sick and we need somebody to run this. So they kind of get messed up and they want to, they're going to, instead of getting to do this, like Oscar's like, ah, I'll take it. So he goes and he does the run. And the next page, it's just another, Tatsuo's back on the job in 1963. And this time we see it's not all just like families escaping to a better time. In this case, Tatsuo is delivering a murderer to the past.
Yeah, he's helping him escape.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, oh, and you see Tatsuo doesn't feel too good about this. All right. And then we get to meet Blondie, who is actually called Helgi, but he's got very blonde hair. He's kind of the guy who runs the syndicate. And he offers Tatsuo a piece of chocolate. And it's interesting just to see like, oh, apparently in 2140 or 41, chocolate's just not readily available. Like it's either been forgotten or whatever. Yeah,
he
like
makes a comment that he brought it in from 1990.
Yeah. So, good
year.
Yeah.
When I was born.
Oh, you youngster. Yeah. And then they have a conversation like the real reason that Helgi brought in Tatsuo was that something happened to Oscar.
Yeah.
And Tatsuo was like, "Wait, what? What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, he was captured while on a run in 3455." And we don't actually know if that was the run he just went on,
yeah,
or if it was some other time. You know, that's the thing about time. It's wibbly wobbly. Tatsuo was like, "Well, we got to go get him." He's like, "Oh no, you don't understand. He's already back."
Right.
And then we see it kind of jumps over, and Tatsuo's going through this club, real futuristic club. You know, people dancing, wearing Cyclops visors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's this voiceover that somebody is basically telling, like, "Oh, obviously, I got caught doing a collection. Some people, you know, took me in because they don't like time travelers in the future." And basically, one thing led to another. He got captured. He got imprisoned. He got sent on jobs and everything. And whenever we finally get to see Oscar, he is an old man. He is living. I mean, he's in a wheelchair. He's got oxygen tubes. And you know, Tatsuo was just like, "What? No, we gotta save you." And he was like, "No, it's I had my life, and I've already taken a euthanasia pill, you know, so like I'm gonna go to sleep and just not wake up." And I was just like, "Ouch."
It's pretty dark.
Yeah. So Tatsuo leaves, and I think I don't know if what he is doing is because he's trying to escape or he's actually doing a job. Like, it didn't make it clear. I like to think he's just like, "I've had enough. I'm stealing a pod and I'm going." And he just goes back one night and he just BS's his way in, you know, and as he's stepping up to the thing, the pod, somebody sticks a gun to his head and they're like basically taking him hostage, and there a shootout happens. You know, some of the guards are shooting after Oscar, or not Oscar, Tatsuo, and this new person, and they damage the vessel and they zap out, and the next thing we see is the pod exploding on arrival in this unknown time. We don't know what it is. We don't know what time it is because the time that's been going across the top is all fractured. So, but the issue closes by him realizing this was an FBI agent named Nadia Wells. And I wondered, was Wells a reference to H.G. Wells?
Interesting.
I don't know.
It could be.
So anyway, that's how the issue ends. Hopefully I'm going to go a little bit quicker through some of these other ones. That was just like setting things up. So
yeah, there's the preface or the thing we always like to say before we go is that you're going to benefit if you treat this like a book club, like is actually in the name Comic Book Club, and actually read this stuff with us. So please check out this work. It's super awesome. The art's great. The story's great. And our summary, while useful and interesting, hopefully, is not the full picture. Yeah.
So we're running this with just two today. So I like how it was so on me that whole time.
When I was talking
it's okay. If you watched the last episode, you got used to that because I was a champ. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why I clapped. I hope it wasn't too loud in your ears. So the beginning of issue two, we are in 2010. Or sorry. Yeah, 2000.
Yes, that's 2010.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I was thinking, this isn't right. And then I remembered. And we're back on what looks like a training mission because Helgi is with Tatsuo and they're delivering bald pills or like curing baldness pills.
Yeah.
So sometimes what they're delivering is chocolate. Sometimes it's pharmaceuticals. Sometimes it's criminals. Sometimes it's people. Equal opportunity smuggler.
Yeah.
But this is a very important scene because if you know me, you know I'm a fan of time travel. Yeah. You know it's one of my hobbies. Mm-hmm. And I'm always watching things wondering, all right, is this the like multiverse type thing? Go back and, you know, butterfly effect, change things. Is it a fixed time? Is it more like Back to the Future where they make their own rules? Is it Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? It turns out this is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Or Dark, you know, that show we were talking about. They have a conversation. And Tatsuo was like, is there any danger of smugglers messing up the past? And Helgi basically says, no, everything that's happened has already happened. So like when smugglers go back and do something, it already happened. And then he goes on to say, plus, if the past could really be changed, do you really think the world would be like this right now? So they're saying, whenever they went back to 2010, it's not like Back to the Future where Marty goes back in time and changes things.
Right.
And the first time through, Marty wasn't there. This would be like, if you were to go to wherever this was in 2010, Helgi and Tatsuo were always there from the beginning. It's not like something that changes after the fact. At least that's how I'm interpreting it. It could be different.
Eternally hurts my brain to think about it too much. It's cool, but sometimes I'm like, just time travel paradoxes, and whatnot.
So, then we go back to the future.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't mean to do that so soon after talking about Back to the Future. Anyway, so we've got Tatsuo and Nadia, and they're just arguing in a field of rubble, just trying to figure out where are we, when are we? And Tatsuo's like, well, I can't tell with all these trees, blah, 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 you know, all kinds of time travel mumbo jumbo. And they're at each other's throats, but finally they had to like team up together because they hear somebody that's coming after them.
And I like that she forces them together by handcuffing both their hands together.
Yeah, like that's a great call. Then we're back in the future, and we're kind of seeing the story unfold simultaneously in the past and the present.
Right.
So Helgi is being apprised of the situation by his assistant, who will later learn is named Fang.
Yep.
And they're basically like, yeah, we can't track the pod that Tatsuo took because it didn't have spatial tech. And by the way, Crestor's still waiting for his shipment. And Helgi's like, well, we don't have any pods left. So like the future ain't so bright, you know. They used to have like 10 of these things and now they're down to like one working one. Well, they had one until Tatsuo took it and it exploded. So
done broked.
Back in the unknown time with Tatsuo and Nadia, we realized that these two people have found them from the Union, which
a rival time travel
sort of
esque company.
He makes a comment that the Union controls most of the second half of the 21st century. So and they're not big on spoilers. So like they're fine, you know, maybe sending people back or very carefully forward, but they don't want to know how things are going to change.
Right.
And they also learned that they're in the year 2093. So, and Tatsuo was like pleading. He's like, no, hey, look, I'm from the syndicate. And if you don't kill me, I'll turn state's evidence on him. Basically, he's like, I will give you information. And back in the future, and I don't know if it's the future, if it's the present, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Einstein.
Ahead of where our main character is.
That's a good way to put it. But in 2141, Helgi's having a conversation with like a corrupt cop.
Yeah.
Blackmail type thing. And over the course of that, we realize that Fang tells him, hey, something just arrived from 2093. And we'll figure out what that is in a minute. But then we go back to 2093 and we meet the union leader. Her name is Karina Jemison. And basically, in my notes, I just put the letter. So if I say T or K or whatever, you know who I'm talking about. It's very fortunate. Nobody has the same first letter in the first five books. Nice. Yeah. So if I say T, you know it's Tatsuo.
Thanks,
K.
Declan.
Yeah. And Rory.
Yeah.
So he anyway, Tatsuo offers, he's like, I've got 8 years of working for the syndicate and I'll tell you everything if you if you give me a pod and just let me go back and let me run away from him. And Karina's like, I'll consider it. And then Goggles comes in, who is a redhead. That's Karina's assistant named Rosalind, at least for now. And it's like, how can you trust these people? And she's like, oh, I don't trust them. But if they give me good intel, we'll squeeze them for as much as we can, and then we'll kill them. Yep. So, and that's it. That was a pretty quick one. This next one's even faster. It only really happens in two times. So, issue 3, we start in 2038, and Tatsuo is in charge of jumping a family to the past. And Helgi comes in and basically like, oh, you're a family of three. Your money only covers a family of two. So one of you can't go. And I guess Tatsuo is like, it's not a big deal. Right. And they're like, oh yeah, it is. So he just like, it was a real quick scene. That was all. We'll realize the significance of that in a bit. All right. So now in super speed, issue 3, we're back in 2093 and Tatsuo is like pointing out syndicate warehouses, terminals on a map. And he's like, okay, they're like, well, how can we even believe you? And he's like, I'll tell you how. This terminal right here, this is where we do most of our business. And if you take it and you take one of your pods and you zap back in time, you go to this specific date and at this time, and if you wait, you will see me delivering a family. And that was the family that started the whole series. Mm-hmm. Like that's the time that he's talking about going back to. You'll see me coming out of there. You can go in, you can check out the pod and you'll be able to corroborate that I'm legit.
Right.
So they're like, okay, eventually they agree to check the claim. So, and then they decide that they want to take Tatsuo and Nadia with them. And so that like, if it's legit, you know, they're there. And if not, then they can do whatever.
Yeah.
And on the way, we basically realize they're talking about it, and Rosalind / Goggles, she basically comes around and be like, I can't believe you gave all this up. You traitor. And goes to shoot, what's his face, Tatsuo.
Yeah.
But Nadia saves him by like blocking her arm and ends up accidentally shooting the dude from the union that was there kind of like as the muscle.
Right.
And then they're in these self-driving cars. The car shuts down because it detected gunfire, and then somebody runs into him, and they're just like, what are you doing?
Real quick, before we get too far ahead, I want to show this art for with the guy that gets shot in the head, the onomatopoeia, the blam.
It is
a slight graphic blood warning. But it just looks like a lot of ketchup to me. But the way that this blam, where's my hand? There. It's like layered in there with the actual action. It's super creative. Do you know if that's the letter's responsibility or is that actually in the art probably?
I don't know.
I'm leaning towards that probably being the artist because, I don't know, maybe they collaborate on that and actually do it. But I just thought that was a super effective, cool way to check that out.
So anyway, they're fleeing the scene and Tatsuo kind of turns. This is what closes out the issue. He's talking to Nadia. He's like, call me crazy, but I think she might work for the syndicate. Like she was calling him a traitor because she had he had just betrayed her cover. So anyway, then we jump to 2130 in issue number 4. And this is where we get to see the farthest back with Nadia. She's with her family, a family of 4, and they're about to jump to the past.
Right.
But Helgi comes in just like the last one. He's like, look, this only covers 2. So we basically learned that the syndicate has split up her family. So they send the mother and her sister back in time, and she and her father stay in the future, trying to just earn enough money to be able to send back. But recently, her dad passed away, and she's like, I've got nothing here. So that's why she wanted to steal the pod. She wanted to go back to her family.
Right. Certainly ups the stakes and kind of gives more interest to why we were here in the first place.
Yeah. So we're back in 2093, and Rosalind admits that she was a syndicate member from 2200, and that Tatsuo has just blown her cover. And basically, she was going to give... I'm just going to read my notes. I'm trying to make sense of it. Rosalind's pod was in Terminal 5, the one that... Yeah, that's what it was. Tatsuo gave up the location of her secretive pod. So she was just like, I've got to get out of here. And she's... Once they're in the pod, and hand over Tatsuo, she tries to convince him, like, just... We'll go to the place ourselves. You just take it and get out of here. And then I'm going to get out of here. But then we jump back to 2141, and this is where we get to see the package that arrived. Yeah. So apparently, Helgi and Fang are sitting there watching a computer screen with Rosalind goggles on there. And she says her name's actually Madeline Kane, which when we recorded this last time, both me and Torrance instantly thought of Madeline Kahn, who is from a bunch of Mel Brooks movies. Anyway, she's look her up. She's passed away, unfortunately. So Goggles gives the address or the time. She's like, look, this dude showed up and he's going to be here at this point. We're going to be at Terminal 5 on this date at this time. So, and this is a really interesting concept of the time travel. It was put in what they call the pipeline. So imagine you open up QuickTime to record a video of yourself and essentially
we do.
Yeah. And essentially put not to be opened until 2400 or 24, whatever. And it just lives there. And I guess people just honor it.
Right.
And it opens at a certain time. So that's the pipeline. At least that's what I'm understanding it to be. But when it gets to Helgi, he watches it and he's like, delete it. So it never makes it to the people she's sending it to. And Helgi's able to swoop in on his own.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens because back in 2093, we realized that as soon as they got into this warehouse, Helgi and Fang are there. And there's a fight. And essentially, Goggles gets killed. And Nadia and Tatsuo get piled into a pod with Helgi and Fang.
Helgi's the one that actually kills.
Yes.
What's her name?
Yeah, she's just like, we can't leave any traces.
Yeah.
So, and then they zip forward to 2141. And one of the most, a very memorable scene, Helgi's like, look, we got a mission for you to go on, and this is going to be what you're going to take. So you see, we got this old, it looks like a phone booth with the glass shot out. And yeah, it's like,
it is like Mark One of these time pods. So it looks super unsafe. Looks like you could fall out of it.
Yeah.
Which, think about the concept of falling out of a time pod. Gets pretty gnarly.
So, Helgi's like, Crestor, which we've heard a bunch about this guy. He's like, he's still waiting for his shipment from 3455, and you're going. Oh, and by the way, there's no radiation shields on this thing, and it can only jump 100 years at a time. So it's just like, we see him zap out and just like year by year by year by year getting worse and worse feeling. I think it might be at the beginning of the next issue. Yeah. If you want to show that. We'll just segue right into number 5. So you can see he's okay, not happy, getting there. Uh-oh, and things are distorting. And you don't have to show the next one. I'll just tell you there's more projectile vomiting when he arrives. So we are in 3455, and this is a desolate dystopia. Like, this looks like the... it's snowy. Everybody's cold. Everything's run down. Everything's broken.
Yeah. Things aren't going well in this year.
Yeah. Then he wanders through because he has directions on where to get to this package. And he, at first I thought that there was a weird humanoid robot with like a hologram head. And then I realized, oh, that was just like the doorbell.
Right.
It was essentially the Ring doorbell of the future. Where it's just you are literally there watching and
Ring
talking.
Ring makes it all the way to 3455. Good job, Ring.
I believe it.
That or it's an Amazon company. Bezos has ruined everything.
Yeah. So he what is this? Gives him a small case, talks a bit. Oh, he warns them. He's like, oh, be careful out there. 3455 does not like time travelers. Well, they don't like anybody.
Yeah.
And that's important. And he gives them this little case. We don't see what's in it yet. But anyway, he leaves. And as he gets to the warehouse where he had just left, walked out of that disgusting old thing, somebody surprises him when they walk out, and it's Oscar. Young Oscar. So it's just like...
Remember we saw him last in a wheelchair.
Yeah. And I'm... this was
taking a euthanasia pill.
This is the moment that everything changed. Because he got... Oscar got picked up in the 3400s right. and captured. So like... we see them talking, and Oscar's really optimistic. He's like, hey, man, it gets better.
Right.
Don't worry. And, you know, they leave, and they're happy. And then Tatsuo walks in and just breaks down because he's looking. He sees this shiny new pod and then his janky old pod. And we don't see what happens, but
yeah,
basically, I clicked on something.
Yeah, I will say, I just want to add, Drew mentioned it, but just to hang on it a little longer there. It was a nice moment so much dark and gloomy things happening for Oscar to turn back to Tatsuo and go, I'm just going to read it directly. He says, I know things are tough right now. I know it's pretty bad. No spoilers, but just believe me, it gets better for us. Much, much better. Just hang in there, okay? And you get like a nice smile from Tatsuo and he says, okay. Yeah. You know, which being a time traveler would probably be pretty reassuring to hear. Like, yeah. It's going to be okay. You're going to make it. At least that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. So then we get back to 2141, and just long story short, a fight breaks out between Nadia and Fang and Helgi, and Nadia's able to get the gun and just shoots Helgi in the chest. And then like right after that happens, we jump back and, oh no, this is the right part. Tatsuo pops out of the shiny pod with a fancy gun, and he was like, oh, I came here to help you. Well, anyway, you got to come with me. You're never going to guess what I found in 3455.
Yeah.
Let's go get you to your family. And then we see back into, so that's like the last we see of Tatsuo for now. Mm-hmm. Then 2093, we see Karina is in the warehouse looking at Goggles' dead body, and basically is just like, the syndicate wants a fight, we'll give him a fight. And then we pop to 2679, and this dude pops his head into a futuristic office, and he's just like, sir, there's been a message from 2141. Something happened to your son. And this dude looks totally just like Helgi.
Yeah.
But I guess it's his dad. But things are good in 2679.
Yeah, it looks like they recovered after many years of things not working out so well.
Yeah,
and that's the end of issue 5.
Yeah, whenever I
first
read it, like I love the first one, I love the second one, the third and fourth. I was like, the third and fourth. I was wondering where we're going with it. I was just like, it felt like it was down a little bit, and then the fifth comes and it's just like question. Let's set up the next run. So I was just like, there we go. Okay.
Yeah, there's certainly like some resolve questions answered, dissonance solved. But, I mean, definitely more questions than answers as far as, like, we're going to keep going, right? And I'm glad. I like the story a lot. It's cool to see how it progresses. And I'm always curious, like, you know, this isn't the first time travel story that's ever come out. And it's, to an extent, I imagine, pretty hard to make this interesting and original, you know. But I feel like they've done some creative stuff in this.
Yeah.
Stuff that I didn't expect. I was especially surprised with bringing Oscar back. Because they kill him in issue 1.
Yeah.
Issue 1, he's dead, and then he comes back in issue 5, is still alive, which makes you kind of question this whole thing. How is this working? Why are you still here after coming back?
I was just looking at it thinking Tatsuo is the one that screwed him over. Like, that was right before he got captured or anything. So I think that's why Tatsuo broke down. He was just like, all right, either I take this janky old one and go back, and I'm miserable, or I take this nice one because I know that Oscar's going to get captured and his life is already over and we can't change the past.
Right.
So it's just like, you know, maybe he just felt like, well, I've got to take this. So
when they say they're going back to 3455, do you think he's going to try to rescue?
No, he said, you'll never guess what I found. Like he was talking about the, I think he was talking about the device
that he got. Okay, so he's just like, makes sense.
It might be something to fix things, to change things.
Yeah.
And I will say, I've read as far as number six. That's this one right here. It's a standalone. I was going to go into it a little bit, but we've been talking for a while. I don't think I'm going to. I'm just going to say, you might be able to find it in your comic stores now. And if not, what I just told you is enough to get you caught up so that you can go and buy number seven and be ready to keep reading.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening to this in November or December of 2021.
Right.
Because seven comes out in another week or two from today when we're
can
recording this.
Can you get these as like actual buy on Comixology? Like, can you pay for these
digitally? I haven't looked. I haven't tried. I imagine you can.
While you're talking real quick. So see if I can actually... Comixology.com. If you didn't know, if you have a Comixology subscription, you can actually get a discount on new books. So I pay for like the $6 or whatever it is a month for Comixology. But if you buy digital copies before they actually hit the app, you get a discount on that price. So they're already cheaper than buying a floppy. It's like a dollar less. Mm. And I think you get like another 50 cents off, which is not crazy, but also in the context of buying tons of issues. Let's see.
Yeah.
Time for...
I didn't know if you wanted time. To like... have everybody watch you scrolling through the internet. So I toss it on you. I'll say a little something about this. It is a standalone. The number six is a standalone issue. We do get to see a little bit more about another member of the syndicate that is back in time. And it's kind of a sad story. You see a little bit more of Oscar. You see a little bit more of Helgi. So it's definitely worth reading. But you can feel safe to jump right in to number seven.
This here. So we just read volume one here. So you can literally click on this. Add that to your cart and buy it. And there's single issues here going through.
Does it have a date for seven?
Seven right here, November 24th, next week, next Wednesday.
So yeah, you might be with your family for Thanksgiving, but you know, the day before, go pick it up.
Yeah, super awesome read. Any closing thoughts on this short run before it keeps going? Where you think it's going.
Time travel is fun. That's all I got to say. Anyway, it was good. Art was good. Coloring was great. Lettering was great. The whole thing was put together wonderfully. Story was fun. I have questions. I want answers.
Yeah, it's cool. Like if
this will be on my pull list.
If you're used to only reading comic books from the big two, I feel like this is a good... transition book to get you into non-superhero comics.
I don't know if we ever said, but this is an Image book.
Correct, yeah. Image puts this out. They did do a Kickstarter to kind of like get this thing off the ground, as many, you know, self-published, or not self-published, but independent title. That's kind of like Image's thing, right? Like they really help the creators like actually get compensated for their work, which is super cool. But I think there are a lot of really cool tiers on Kickstarter of like getting like, I don't want to misspeak, but I want to say there was like collections of like sketch art from the original thing that they would give you, and just like a lot of pre-production.
I wish I'd been aware of that.
Materials. I was, and didn't jump in on it, but I did at least, I was aware of it, and I was like, okay, I'm at least going to buy issues, the first couple, and check it out. And I did. And, I didn't actively stop reading it. I just kind of got caught up in life, as one does, and didn't pick up issues three and four.
That's the tough thing sometimes whenever you're going to the store, unless you literally go every week and you look for things. Like, you could fall out of the habit or just happen to go on a week when, oh, that came out a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and it's out of stock. So, like, you really have to plan ahead.
Yeah, I was also, at the time, getting the majority of my comics from Midtown Comics, the comic store in New York, which... paying shipping on that makes you want to wait to order stuff so that you can actually like make your shipping worth it. So I would wait till I had like 10 books to order and then get everything. And I guess it just kind of fell through the cracks. But I'm glad we picked it up again so that we can keep reading it. And I imagine we'll be paying attention to this series and see if the next run or the next trade is worth bringing back onto the show, which I imagine it might be. Any closing thoughts?
If you're listening to this the week it comes out, go look this up, read it, and also see if you can make it to number 13 of Hawkeye. So yes. You'll be ready to hear what we have to say about it next week.
Yeah, because that show comes out next Wednesday as well. So yeah. Issue 7 of Time Before Time and 2 episodes of Hawkeye on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
What a time to be a nerd.
Yep.
What a time. Once again, reach out to us on our social media, like and subscribe on YouTube if you're watching us there. Leave a comment. Ask us questions. Tell us what you're reading. We just want to interact and talk with comics or talk with you guys all about comics. That's all I got.
Find the YouTube. Leave the hashtag #TwoManChristmas2021 so you can be entered for a giveaway. Jump on the Discord. Let us know. Probably by the time this comes out, you have just a little bit of time left to be a part of the first ever two-man Secret Santa thing. We've already got, I don't know, a good chunk of people who are wanting to do it.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. That's been it for us on this episode of Two-Man Comic Book Club podcast. We will see you next time. Bye. Two-Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our graphic and logo work is done by Tessa Price, and our original compositions and theme music were composed by Drew Morris.
Oh, we're recording. I didn't realize we were recording.
Two-Man.